Let's get this party started as efficiently as possible. I think that's going to be the best way to go.
Doobie doobie doo. How's your Bud Ice?
Bud Ice? Wow. We start off the show with a reference to Bud Ice.
Are we actually recording?
Oh, wait. Yes, I am. Shit.
Oh.
This is Junk Food Cinema.
Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Junk Food Cinema here on FilmSchoolRejects.com. This is the weekly cult and exploitation film cast that is so good, it just has to be fattening. I am your host, Brian Salisbury, and I am joined once again by my friend and co-host, novelist, screenwriter, lieutenant of Megaforce.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. C. Robert Cargill.
How you doing, Brian?
I'm good. We're back from Minnesota.
Minnesota.
We did not die of alcohol poisoning, which is always a plus for Convergence. Yeah,
we're pretty good. We have it. We you know, make our constitution saves every year and survive alcohol poisoning.
Yeah, that we do.
Every year. We survive. Year. It's something I really don't worry about anymore.
Yeah. Well, we're professionals. We're clearly professionals. And if you want to hear more of our professionalism, you can do so on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. And I highly recommend, if you haven't already, listen to the audio from our live show at Convergence. You should check that out. Mr. Neil Miller, the editor of Film School Rejects, also found a way to embed the PowerPoint presentation that we used during that show. So there you go. Podcasts nice. Now with PowerPoint, because that's not the nerdiest thing in the world.
I love that you didn't have a cold open at all this week. So you just let mic testing go and just recorded it. And then you're like, that's the gag.
Yeah, because again, professionalism. Hooray. Hey, you can also follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema and like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/ you'll never guess what it is, Junk Food Cinema. So we're continuing through Buddy Cop July, which is a very exciting month. I'm super happy to be talking about the movies we are talking about. I'm gonna play a little bit of leapfrog. I think when we initially put up the schedule of movies we're going to be talking about, I had a different one in the sophomore slot. Obviously, Tango and Cash got us kicked off on the right foot, to say the very least.
Oh, yeah.
But this week's film is probably way less renowned as Tango and Cash. I can't believe I'm actually saying that. A movie that probably way fewer people have seen.
Look, if Tango and Cash is the A-list blockbuster version of these kind of campy buddy cop movies of the 80s, this is the 80s B movie to end all 80s B movies.
It really is. And we're, of course, talking about Dark Angel.
No, we're not.
Wait a minute.
No, we are not. We are not talking about Dark Angel.
No, we are not talking about Dark Angel.
Dark Angel is what people refer to it who only discovered it on video. Mm-hmm. Those of us who actually paid to see it in a theater, all fucking 12 of us, mm-hmm. we paid to see I Come in Peace.
Houston, Texas. It's Christmas. Someone special's coming to town, and it's not Santa Claus.
I'm coming, peace.
That may be the most umbrage I have ever seen you take in a single episode of Junk Food.
You know, it's very weird. It's one of those weird little sticking points with me, because all the film nerds are like, "Oh, you mean Dark Angel?" It's like, no, motherfucker. I mean, I Come in Peace.
They did that to us at Convergence when we mentioned it. It was like, no, not Dark Angel, you fuck sticks.
No. Dark Angel. Yes, I get it. The Japanese release, which was the only way you could get it for a while, was called Dark Angel.
Yeah,
that was the international title. But this film is fucking American. It is fucking American, and it was released in America for like a week.
And it stars American hero Dolph Lundgren.
Dolph Lundgren.
The giantest Swede ever. It's so American, it was actually shot in Houston, Texas, right here in the Lone Star State.
Indeed.
And this is a movie, first of all, I want to point out that it has actually three titles, because it was originally titled Lethal Contact when it was written in 1984 as a spec script released by Jonathan Tidor. And at that time, they still were looking at Dolph Lundgren for the lead. It kind of became a completely different movie. And then the production filming international title was Dark Angel. It was released as Dark Angel worldwide before for the American, for the late U.S. release. Now, it was released in America last. So this movie had been circulating for a while. And it wasn't until it was released in the States that it was changed to I Come in Peace, which I don't know where the fuck Dark Angel comes from. That has nothing to do with the plot of the movie.
No, well, no, I get it. It's a metaphor for, you know, the alien, but
you're talking about the alien that looks like Dietrich Bader, not the bad guy alien, right?
No, I think it's the bad guy alien.
I don't get that. But we'll get to that in a moment. The basic premise of this story, of this movie,
is one of the most ridiculous we will ever share with you.
Yes. Try and stick with me here.
Before we even get to that, I just want to lay out the general thing that's important about this film.
All right.
This film is one of those rare films that we're going to talk about that isn't particularly good.
See, I disagree.
You can disagree all you like. However, let me go in with this. I don't think you can call it legitimately good. The thing about this movie is everything that goes wrong in this movie is entertaining as fuck. Mm-hmm. And everything that goes right with this movie is entertaining as fuck. Yeah. It is never boring. I've showed it to a couple different rooms full of people and everyone was glued to the set and could not stop watching it. At the end, we're like, holy shit, that was fun. I've watched it in a theater full of people who had never seen it before, and they were just like, holy shit, that movie was so much fun.
Yeah,
that is what this movie is. This movie is pound for pound as entertaining as almost any you will watch,
which I think there is merit in that and how entertaining this movie
is. Oh, absolutely.
Is.
I just won't defend it as good. I'm not going to say this movie is good because so much of what is entertaining about this movie is so not good. And yeah, we're about to explain the premise, which is easily, handily, amongst the most ridiculous we will ever. Battle Truck and Megaforce have nothing on fucking I Come in Peace.
Well, Battle Truck tells you right from the beginning what the movie's about because it's called fucking Battle Truck.
Battle Truck. Is there a truck? Yes. Does it do battle? Yes. What else is in the movie?
Who cares?
A dude on a motorcycle. We don't care. It's fucking Battle Truck.
Absolutely.
But
this is different.
Dark Angel, I Come in Peace. What was the third, the original title?
Lethal Contact.
Lethal Contact. None of that prepares you for what kind of movie we're talking about. Like, none of it.
No.
Like, I Come in Peace hints at aliens. But like, is it E.T.? Is it, you know, The Thing? What are we watching?
Yeah.
You know, Dark Angel tells you fucking nothing. It's a goddamn metaphor that barely works. And Lethal Contact sounds like a direct-to-video title starring Shannon Tweed.
Yeah, it does. It's like the softcore porn version of Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense because what I love about I Come in Peace is that it is one of the most glorious examples of a movie that throws everything at the wall.
Oh, yeah.
Sees what sticks and then blasts the wall apart with a goddamn rocket-propelled grenade.
No, not a rocket-propelled grenade. An alien super gun.
An alien super gun, which I only found out while watching it recently is actually based upon a real gun. It's a modified Calico M950. So if you are a gun nut, there's a little bit of
trivia. Or you play Call of Duty and think you are a gun nut.
Yes.
360 no space.
But
360 no scope, motherfucker.
I know what it really is. I'm adapting it to this movie, which, by the way, it's about an alien who comes down from space and happens upon. I'm trying to put this in the right order. It's an alien that steals cocaine from these yuppie criminals and then proceeds to use the cocaine to inject. He injects the cocaine into people and then steals. Is it their adrenal glands? He's stealing like
the endorphins.
Glands.
He's stealing like the adrenaline.
The adrenaline. Yeah.
He's stealing
because that's a drug on his planet.
Yes, because alien races pay a lot for our endorphins.
Yeah,
and so he is stalked across space by a bounty hunter cop who is also an alien
who also looks a lot like Dietrich Bader.
And yet, you would think
that's the whole movie.
Well, you'd think that's the main character.
No.
Like this alien cop. That's the most interesting thing to do with. No, because
no.
I Come in Peace is not done with coming up with plot points yet.
Yeah, because the thing is, this is a cop movie that crash lands in the middle of a separate cop movie.
Yes, it's two cop movies rolled into one.
It's see, I mean, if you only
you got your alien cop movie right. and my buddy cop comedy. You got your buddy cop comedy and my alien cop drama. I have an idea. Let's put Dolph Lundgren in it. I mean, it really, yes. Yeah, so we have a cop who's on the case, tracking down the cocaine from the yuppie scum that you've talked about, and his partner gets killed.
Yeah,
and so now he's out to get the guys.
His partner, who is the only black guy in the whole movie, by the way, I just want to point that out. Is killed during a sting operation. And my favorite thing about that is that if you only allowed yourself to watch the opening 10 minutes of this film, your neck would break. It starts off, you're watching an alien crash land into a Shane Black film for some reason. It's Christmas. There's a guy driving, listening to a CD of Christmas music. He almost hits a bus. He swerves into it. Like, seriously, if Riggs and or Murtaugh had been in that little Christmas tree farm, I wouldn't have been surprised at all. It feels very Shane Black. And then a seemingly completely separate film starts as soon as the first alien crash lands.
Yep.
And a heist movie is going on. You're like, oh, okay, this is interesting. Roll the opening credits over this heist film. And then the whole thing slams into a Miami Vice episode with a sting operation.
Yep.
So if you're only watching the first 10 minutes of this movie, you have no idea what this movie is about.
No, you really don't. You're just like, this is every 80s B movie rolled into one.
Exactly.
At this point. And then it starts coming together.
It does. It comes together in peace. So Dolph Lundgren is sitting outside listening. And here's what's so great about Dolph Lundgren's character. Dolph Lundgren's character isn't just a good cop. He is the fucking best cop.
He's a complete Mary Sue of a character.
He really is, because the reason his partner gets killed isn't because he was a bad cop. The reason his partner gets killed is he's such a good cop that he can't let a separate crime go unattended while his partner is literally fighting for his life in the middle of this drug deal. He's like, oh, I really want to help my partner, but those guys are robbing a liquor store. Keep talking, guys. And he runs off and he foils in spectacular fashion, spoils the liquor store robbery, and then finds out his partner is dead. So again, it's not that he's a bad cop. He's in fact the best cop. And of course, that ends up with him being made to take forced leave. For some reason, I still haven't quite figured out. He's really angry. He wants to get the...
Because he was lax on his duties and wasn't there when his buddy needed him.
But that's the argument that I would make, is like, what was he? Was he supposed to not attend to the other crime? Was that...
Yeah. That's kind of the point that they're going with, because this movie just is what this movie is. It's just you
can't. Can we put that on the poster retroactively?
Yes.
This movie is what this movie is.
Like, literally, this is one of those movies where if you stop to question one part of it,
you
have to question all of it. And
you may actually shatter the space-time continuum.
And it's just like, I don't understand, you know? Wouldn't it be easier to just come down and kidnap a bunch of people and, consistently give them cocaine to steal their endorphins, or, pay guys to do that for you, or what have you? I mean, why would you come down and just kill homeless people and inject all that cocaine into them and then steal their endorphins and run off? I mean, it's just like, that's the hardest way to go about it. Like, you're from an advanced species and that's your plan?
That guy's clearly gone rogue. I mean, he's clearly like, no, I've got a better way to get this direct. You know what it is? He's the Whole Foods drug dealer of space. He wants to get it organic, straight from the source. He's going to go down and find free range endorphins and bring them back so that they are more organic than the processed endorphins that are being sold on his planet.
And you'd also kind of think, well, why? First of all, I mean, like, this is the thing with the movie. See, once you start tugging at that thread, how did he know where the drug deal was going down?
Yeah, he kind of stumbles across it.
Why would he know that this is the drug that he needs to get endorphins? How would he know that? Why didn't he bring drugs of his own that trigger human endorphins? Like, what? There's so many questions that go unanswered in I Come in Peace that, so stop questioning it. Just kind of go along with it, because if you do, it's fucking awesome.
It really is. And the reason this qualifies as a buddy cop movie has nothing to do with the aliens, by the way.
Oh, we've just gotten past the aliens.
We are like chipping at the tip of the iceberg of weird that is this movie. So Dolph Lundgren, now that his partner's dead, is teamed up with an FBI agent played by Brian Bembem, who
you'll remember from Dream On if you had HBO in the 90s.
Yeah, there you go. So he's a very by the book type of cop, kind of a pencil pushing kind of bookworm type cop, and Dolph Lundgren is
a renegade cop.
A renegade who kicks people in the face. That's really his raison d'etre.
Again, this is the most 80s B movie ever.
Yeah.
If there's an element that you're familiar with in 80s movies, it will find some way into this. This is what happens when people who are making movies go, well, we kind of want to make a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, meets a Shane Black movie,
meets aliens,
meets an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
Yeah.
But with Dolph Lundgren. So, but something that's slightly better than Red Scorpion. So, yeah. How do we do that? And it's like, well, let's just throw everything fucking together.
Do you have a Cuisinart? Cause we can make this happen.
Cause we can make, and they do. And the thing is, all of these elements land in the way that they're supposed to land.
Yeah.
Like, you don't just end up, it's not one of those movies that these things come out of left field and you're just like, what the fuck is going on? I don't understand this.
Yeah.
No, you follow along the entire fucking time. You're right in it. It's just a universe you never thought existed.
Yeah, exactly. There's an element of discovery there, because you're like, oh, I didn't realize I lived on a planet where this kind of movie could exist.
And yet there it is.
But apparently I do.
And you'd think, from everything we just told you, there's no way anybody put a nickel into this movie. But it's got really good, it's got really great character design. It's got really great special effects.
The production value is ridiculous.
The production value, like, just the aliens are fucking cool, and the weapons are great. It's got great action sequences, and it's shot really well. Very of its time, very hip for 1989.
The cinematographer on this movie is fucking Cronenberg's guy.
Yeah.
He did Videodrome, Scanners, The Dead Zone, The Fly. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
That is why this movie looks so good. This movie looks way better than when we're describing the plot to you and we read you the cast list. You're forming an image of in your head of what this movie looks like, what the texture of this movie is.
Yeah, you like the walls are cardboard, and that Dolph Lundgren accidentally bumps into one and you see it like wobble.
Yeah.
Like, no, that's not what this movie is at all. This is like, how the fuck did, you know, how the fuck has this gone so long without people knowing it exists?
I think there's an adequate metaphor, an appropriate metaphor, in the scene where we see Dolph Lundgren's apartment, because
we'll get there. I have a whole thing about his apartment.
Specifically about the cinematography and how it looks, is that Dolph Lundgren's character is a very like rough and like karate master, don't take shit from anybody kind of a guy. And then when you see his apartment, you're like, does Prince fucking live here? I'm so confused.
I was going to talk about this later after we finally worked our way through the first act.
But this is what I'm saying, and we'll get there. But this is what I'm saying, is that the movie itself, when you hear it described, is that Dolph Lundgren character. Yeah. But then you find out it lives in that apartment. That is so apt a metaphor for this movie.
Except that apartment is the 80s boiled down.
Yeah.
Like, right down to, you know, you walk into the apartment, you're like, oh, okay, he's Oscar from, or not Oscar, Felix from
The Odd Couple.
The Odd Couple. Mm-hmm. And you walk in, and it's Italian leather couches, and it's this cliched 80s art that was really hip that all the rich yuppie douchebags used to have.
Yeah.
He's got a billiards table right there in the middle. He's got a wine bar, and everybody who walks in is like,
wine.
Yeah. No, and he's like, did you expect something else? And it's like, yeah, because you're a cliche that has been combined with a separate cliche. Like, they mashed two cliches together, which is the perfect metaphor for this movie. Like,
it really is. You walk into that apartment, you're like, oh, I was expecting something completely different from what you've presented me, and then you get something you didn't expect. And this movie looks fantastic. The effects are fantastic. The action sequences are actually really well done, despite the fact that it's mostly just Dolph Lundgren kicking people in the face.
Yeah.
And special space guns going off. I mean, there's not a lot of depth to the construction of these set pieces, but they all work so well.
Yeah. No, but the thing is every single one of them feels like every other 80s movie. Yeah. Like, this is really just where we talked about how Tango and Cash was the final, you know,
it was 80s. The last movie released in the 80s.
It's the last movie of the 80s. This is kind of a grand master's thesis on 80s genre films.
Yeah.
Like, it really is just everything thrown in. And I love The Apartment. I think The Apartment is really important for everything right and everything wrong about this movie. Because the thing about The Apartment is the reason why in writing, when you have that renegade cop and he's got the shitty apartment and it's dirty and it's messy and he's a slob, they're adding depth to the character. Yeah, he's a super cop, but he doesn't have his life together. So that's the imbalance here. And with Dolph Lundgren, it's like, no, Dolph Lundgren is fucking good at everything. It's really like, is. Dolph Lundgren doesn't fuck up.
Yeah, I feel like if you watch this movie right after you watch Tango and Cash, if you weren't wearing rainbow striped shirts and Benetton pants when you were started watching those two movies together, you will be by the end, and plastic earrings, and because it's so 80s that it will transform you.
Yeah.
It will absolutely change you. You'll be drinking Crystal Pepsi. You won't even know why.
So, okay. So let's get back to this plot that we've been meandering through. It's like,
have we not covered the whole plot yet? This movie just keeps unfolding.
Yeah. No. 'Cause that's just it is, we have, you know, Dolph Lundgren's been suspended and he's paired with this FBI agent. They don't want to work together. Neither of them like each other. They're both super cops, and yet both of them
in
hate each other
in very different ways.
In very different ways, and yet in the same way. It's the thing about them is while they are on the surface very different from Tango and Cash, they suffer from that same problem of, no, you guys are both really like the same dude.
Just one's a little taller.
Yeah, just one of you is dedicated more towards, you know, doing the right thing, and one of you is more towards doing the right thing by the book.
Yeah.
You know, that's your difference. And then one's taller, and there's lots of short jokes.
Yeah.
And so what you then get is two guys who are on the trail of what they believe is a very human, you know, drug runner who's killed a bunch of people. And then
they don't even know. That's the best part, is they're going on as if a regular cop movie is happening. It's very Hitchcock. The audience knows more than the characters. They are just going about their business like the killer isn't a big fucking alien, because they don't even know they're in a sci-fi movie. We're watching characters who don't know they're in a sci-fi movie.
And as they start to figure it out, they don't believe that they're in a sci-fi movie. It's kind of bullshit. And then the sci-fi movie takes off, and then the movie's just bug fuck nuts.
Well, and the one element we haven't mentioned yet is that the way that the alien dispatches the drug dealers at the beginning of the movie is with a gauntlet that fires
killer compact discs.
Killer compact discs.
Killer CDs. CDs? CDs nuts?
I mean, essentially, that's what he says as he walks in the room. Actually, what he says is, I come in peace. And then kills people. So he may be from another planet.
CD.
He may be from another planet. He may be a ruthless killer. He may be some kind of weird intergalactic drug dealer. But he does understand irony. And I guess that's something.
Well, the beauty of this is this movie was made just after CDs had come out. Mm-hmm. They weren't popular yet. And it was like somebody looked at a CD and goes, you know, it'd be really cool if you could kill somebody with this. I want to make a movie about killing somebody with a CD.
Yeah.
And they did.
And they did. And it's funny because throughout most of the movie, he's either using his super drug farming cocaine injector and gauntlet spike,
which looks really fucking cool.
It really does. It really does. Or he's using that space gun. So my question is, did he bring that compact disc shooter just to kill those six guys at the beginning of the movie?
He uses it a couple of times.
Does he? Because I only remember seeing him use it that one time.
Yeah, no,
and it's
he
like,
uses it a couple
well,
times.
I guess we're good here. But yeah, so the thing about the CDs, I watched this movie. I had seen it several times before. We've seen it at the Draft House a few times. It's kind of a favorite of theirs, and for good reason. It is the epitome
as fuck.
It's the epitome of a good time. I mean, you crack beers and you go along with this movie and how insane it is, and you just are having fun. And then it's almost like this weird accidental tertiary thing happens where, as you're just kind of laughing and having fun, you're like, oh, that actually looked really good, or oh, that was actually done really well. Like, this movie tricks you with, like, it's deceptively good, like, I think.
Yeah.
Because there are all these elements that do work. You just might not notice them at first because you're laughing at the concept of this movie, at the construct of this movie, just the way it's set up, you're like, I cannot believe what I'm seeing. But as I was watching it this time, it occurred to me, this may be the most anti-yuppie sci-fi movie I have ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
Because all of the drug dealers in this movie, all of them, are they are urban, rich, white guys, most of them young. And
with sports cars.
With sports cars, which, you know, I looked up the official definition of a yuppie according
because you're young enough to not actually have lived through it.
No. But I wanted to be clear. So according to Wikipedia, the definition
Adia?
Wikipedia, it's a young college educated adult who has a job that pays a lot of money and who lives and works in or near a large city. What I find interesting about that is the word college educated, because there's this during the sting operation, there's this speech that the drug kingpin gives. He himself is very much a yuppie, but he goes on and on and on about getting a college education. Without a college education, you really need a master's degree, because you get desperate, you turn to a life of crime, and it actually doesn't serve any purpose at all, this whole speech, except to set up that great line where he asks the cop, where did you go to school? And the cop says, the University of Suck My Dick, which is, don't get me wrong, a great piece of dialogue, but there is...
It's also one of the top 20 party schools.
It's true. It's Arizona State, and then Suck My Dick University, and then Go Fuck Yourself Tech, I think is third on that list. But then I started thinking about this, and I was like, wait a minute. Did they just bring that up and harp on it so that they could really drive the point home that these guys are yuppies? And by the way, they're called the White Boys.
Oh yeah,
that's what the gang is called.
Yeah, no, I mean there's that scene where he's, you know, Lundgren sneaks into the building by going out and smacking all of the sports cars sitting out in front, so all the alarms go off.
Yeah,
and then all the white boys run out and he sneaks in the door. Because it's just that easy, which leads up into one of the more ludicrous scenes in the movie.
Just so good, though.
Where
just so
he walks into a board meeting where this drug, you know, the drug kingpin is holding a board meeting and says, all right, everybody, guns on the table. And then the guy's like, all right, everybody, listen, do what he says. And every single board member pulls out a pistol and puts it on the fucking table. It's like, what kind of fucking board meeting were you having where everybody thought they needed to be packing?
It's a board meeting in the mind of Patrick Bateman. That's what's going on. And then you have an alien that comes down and starts killing them with CDs. Why CDs?
CDs.
Because... in 1989, here's something I found out that was interesting. When this movie went into production, Deutsche Grammophon became the first major company to announce they would no longer release they would no longer release their music on vinyl. They were only going to do CDs from now on. So this was really a period where the CD player had started to become accessible to more than just the ridiculously affluent.
Yeah.
So... I know this is going to sound crazy, just crazy, but I think there is something of a defeat, something of a resignation in using the CDs to kill the yuppies, because the yuppies had ensured that CD had killed vinyl. And all of a sudden, that technology that had been such a standard bearer for success, such a, an indicator that you had achieved wealth, was being used to literally cut yuppie throats.
Yeah, except that, you know, one of the things that you have to take into context was at the time, nobody was lamenting the loss of albums. Albums were actually, a lot of people were happy to see albums go. Like, there's that hipster love of vinyl now, that wasn't a thing in the late 80s. We weren't like, oh man, I can't buy my records in the record store. That was the same thing we'd heard 10 years ago that we snickered at with, oh man, I can't buy my 8-tracks in the store anymore.
I think people lament it because it's a giant fucking inconvenience. Like, I don't think they lamented it because they thought one quality was superior to another, but I mean, you have to admit that whenever there's a major technology changeover like that, it's a giant pain in the ass.
Except that it allowed us to do things you couldn't do with a record. I mean, and that was a big thing at the time. I mean, we could actually press random and listen to all the songs on a CD out of order.
Yeah.
We could listen to the entire album without having to turn it over, because we had to do that on tapes too.
Yeah.
Put it on repeat and listen to the same song over and over again. Like, it was there were a lot of advantages, in the same way that DVD, you know, very happily took over VHS. You know, CDs took over vinyl. Now, you always, you know, like right now we're going through that kind of hipster nostalgia resurgence where everybody's like, nah, VHS is best, and no, albums are the greatest. And it's like, hey, they were great and they had their time, but they are actually better than these other.
I kind of take exception to the idea that that's a hipster thing, because, like, yeah, I mean, obviously the quality on a VHS is nowhere near as good as it is on DVD, but hipsterism is, by its definition, a completely fabricated false fandom. And it's like, if you legitimately have nostalgia for those things and that's why you enjoy them, like, I don't consider that hipster at all. I think if you start going around saying that VHS is the superior format, you're just out of your mind. But I feel like there is a legitimate fandom in those things, and there's like for collectors, because I personally collect VHS, and it's not because I think that they're coming back. It's because I just have a fondness for the way certain movies look on VHS, and some movies still only exist in that format.
Yeah.
But from a consumer level, from a just like, you know, Joe Blow consumer level, like, anytime there's a major changeover, it's a pain in the ass. And I really do think that no matter how we may feel about CD versus vinyl, the filmmakers, I think, have a real problem with yuppie culture, and they wanted to find a way to destroy yuppies with their own excess. And I think that's what the CD firing from the gauntlet represents, because it makes no fucking sense otherwise.
No,
I don't, like, why did the aliens have see?
I think because somebody looked at it and said, you know, in the same way that, like, that famous story of what happened on Star Wars Episode One, where you know, one of the model makers made a ship and said, hey, George, this is a ship I built.
Yeah.
And George Lucas looked at it and said, oh no, I don't like it as a ship. And then turned it over and held onto the wing. And he's like, makes a really cool gun though. Turn it into a gun. And like, it's like one of those things that somebody saw a CD and like, hey, I'll bet you could kill somebody if you threw it. And they're like, no, you can't get, it's just plastic. Like, yeah, but if this were made out of metal and looked like this and fired from a really cool gauntlet, I'll bet you could kill people with it. And somebody said, that would be a great weapon in a movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, something to that effect.
So even though they had mastered interplanetary travel, they had not graduated musically past the CD. They never thought there was going to be.
Or maybe they're a lot like us now, where, you know, they went digital and then you just had a whole spool of CDs sitting in your, you know, in your cabinet somewhere. And you're like, I wish I had a gauntlet to fire these out of to kill people.
If this were remade, they would be like AOL and Netscape internet discs just lying around.
I kind of want to go through and digitally add that to all the scenes.
Right? It's like, hey, 150
AOL 7.0
of AOL.
1,000 free hours.
Get your internet from a fucking disc. That's always the way it will be done. But it, despite all of that, I mean, there is so much about... I actually want to talk for a second about Dolph Lundgren in this movie, because, and I legitimately feel this way, I think he proves more competent as a leading man in this film than he ever did, than in anything else he ever did. And I have seen a lot of Dolph Lundgren movies.
I think that's fair. I think that's really fair. As a leading man, it's not his best role.
No.
But as a leading man, he's totally competent in that, you know, he's still not great.
Well, I mean, he's a tough, you know, he's a tough cop. He's doing the martial arts stuff and he's doing the one-liners. But his performance actually has, like, an emotional intensity at times that, while, you know, it's not going to get him an Oscar, it makes him far more relatable and far more human than he usually comes across.
Oh, yeah. Like, especially in this era when you're seriously talking about stuff like Red Scorpion.
Yeah, exactly. And where, like, the raw anger that he feels about his partner dying and, like, the whole, like, I want to take this drug dealer out. Like, you feel for the
Mendoza!
Guy.
Mendoza!
Mendoza! Is that a Rainer Wolfcastle reference?
No, that's a Simpsons reference.
Yeah, Rainer Wolfcastle from The Simpsons.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
The Arnold Schwarzenegger kind of ripoff. Yeah, that's
good. It's kind of Arnold Schwarzenegger, but really, I mean, it's the Arnold Schwarzenegger character, but really he's doing Dolph Lundgren movies.
It's true. I actually think he's really good in this, and I mean, good. I should probably qualify that. He is good for Dolph Lundgren in this movie, but that, to me, given all of the insane shit that's going on around him, God love him, he actually does ground this movie a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, even his partner, who's supposed to be, like, the more, like, nebbish bookworm character, is kind of, like, he's got that line in, first of all, can we talk about the fact that in 80s movies, even though I know this was released in 1990, I'm going to call it an 80s movie.
Well, because it was made in the
80s. It was made in the 80s. Why in all of these movies do they not understand what a strip club really is? You ever notice that? They go to strip clubs, quote unquote, but it's like a pool hall, it's like a trendy restaurant, and then just happens to be a woman in a cowboy hat showing her tits on the stage. It's like, this is not a strip club at all. What the fuck is this?
Well, the thing is, I'm not sure, since I wasn't old enough to go in the 80s.
Uh-huh.
I did not, you know, reach of age to go until the early 90s. So I can't quite tell if, you know, there was a standardization point at which all strip clubs became the same sleazy kind of weird place.
Yeah.
Or if before that it was just kind of the wild, wild west of just...
Literally, with cowgirls dancing on the stage.
Yeah, like, we bought this restaurant and it used to serve sushi, so the sushi thing will be the, you know, the dance part. And
come for the sushi.
Girls take their clothes off around, you know, I don't know.
Come for the sushi, stay for the lap dances.
Yeah, or it was just, you know, they were like, look, because there's also that point where, you know, they would probably use whatever was available that wasn't too expensive.
Yeah.
And they were like, look, it's the 80s. Nobody's going to admit to having been in a strip club to question it. Like, no critic's going to come out and go, their strip clubs are inauthentic, because they'll get angry letters. So, you know, from old school marms and
I'll fess up. I would have totally called them out for that.
I have for a newspaper back in the
80s. I know, but had I been, and given my complete lack of dignity as it stands, I feel that I probably would have been the
most honest unemployed film critic in the 1980s.
As opposed to being the most honest unemployed film critic in 2015. So
there we go. I don't know what it was. I have this feeling like it was just probably with the rampant attitude at the time. I get the general feeling that it's like, look, well, everybody gets that it's a strip club. It doesn't have to be authentic, because the only people who go to strip clubs that will know it's inauthentic aren't going to say it to anybody,
or shouldn't say it to anybody. And yet it's funny, because it's like a crash course in how not to production design. Because as they walk through this building, it's like, oh, they're in a pool hall. Oh, well, okay, it's just a bar pool hall. Okay, it's a trendy restaurant. Okay, there are naked women. Where they, like, as they progress through the room, it's like the room changes. The establishment changes from one turn of a corner to another.
That's another metaphor for this movie.
It really is. Exactly. They're trying to send us a message from space.
Every time you think you know where you are in the movie, you're just like, okay, now there's some crazy alien super cop.
Yeah.
And why is Dolph Lundgren better than alien super cop? Like, I don't understand.
Yeah. It makes no sense. But the movie, much like in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, is trying to send us these messages that we're just not hearing. It is trying to communicate with us and tell us exactly what we're in for, even if we don't recognize it at the time.
I feel like this movie actually gets how goofy it is, which is why the comedy works when it does.
Yeah, that's true.
And then the times that the comedy doesn't work, it's the very 80s cliche. It's the same stuff as that we were talking about with Tango and Cash, where it's just these jokes that land flat because that's what people wanted at the time.
Well,
you know, just like 10, 15 years ago, you couldn't make a movie that didn't reference another movie. Mm-hmm. And you had to, name check other movies or make other movie references, because that made everybody laugh until everybody's like, okay, we're done with that. That's not funny anymore. This era was all about yakety smackety. I'm gonna bust your balls. Well, I'm busting your balls. All right, Mendoza. You know, it was
balls thoroughly busted.
Yeah, it was just a very weird period in writing, and it's kind of part of it's Shane Black's fault, because Shane did it so well.
Yeah.
And everybody tried to copy that, but you don't just copy Shane Black. Like, Shane has a certain magic to him that is very, very hard to duplicate. And when you have so many mediocre talents going at it at once, you're going to get lots of just bad jokes. And that's what most of that era is. And this movie epitomizes that. And yet at the same time, some of those comic moments really fucking work.
Yeah. And I think part of that, this is interesting to me, is that there was a major an overhaul of this script done by, I'm going to mispronounce his name, but David Koepp, I believe is how you pronounce his name.
Oh, yeah, that's how you pronounce it.
Okay.
Pretty sure it's
I mean, the guy who wrote fucking Jurassic Park and Carlito's Way and the first Mission Impossible and Stir of Echoes, like... I mean, he's written a lot of shit, too. I'm not going to, like, pretend this guy's the greatest screenwriter who ever lived. But, I mean, this was a, at the time, you know, this was a guy who was not really well known.
This was his younger, early screenwriting days.
This was before he wrote Toy Soldiers and, you know, put himself on the map.
Whoa, Toy Soldiers is great.
It is great. It's absolutely great. That's what I'm saying.
For a second there, that your tone seemed a little more sarcastic than Toy Soldiers deserves.
No sarcasm at all.
All right, wait. Everybody get ready to take a drink. Why haven't we done a Toy Soldiers episode?
I think we kind of did, actually. Put your glasses down. We did a Die Hard ripoff episode where
we mentioned Toy Soldiers in passing. Haven't covered Toy Soldiers in full, in the breadth that it deserves.
All right, take your drink. We'll cover it full. It'll get its own episode. But, I mean, you have a guy like that come in and rewrite it, and a guy who would later go on to write some pretty phenomenal movies, including, I'm going to say it, The Shadow. I love the 1994 Shadow with Alec Baldwin.
You do.
Love that movie.
Yeah, you do.
So I think there's a lot.
You also love The Phantom.
I don't. Well, yeah, I do. I'm not going to apologize for that. I'm also not going to try and defend that movie. But I think it's one of those things where the comedy works in this because of things that were done in the rewrite. Whereas with Tango and Cash, Stallone was constantly rewriting the script as they were going along. And that dialogue feels like bad ad lib. All of the stuff that doesn't work in Tango and Cash feels like bad ad lib. Whereas in this movie, the stuff that doesn't work just feels like, I don't know whose idea that was, but that setup was never going to work. But there is, you know, one of the things that somebody pointed out to me on Facebook, speaking of Tango and Cash, is that we have set up an accidental Michael J. Pollard double feature, because Michael J. Pollard, who plays the head of the bizarre Q branch of the LAPD in Tango and Cash, also appears in this film as the sort of obligatory informant character. And there's a scene.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that scene. That scene's so fucking weird.
It's so strange. There's a scene, he's being shaken down by Dolph Lundgren, and there's a scene where...
Who, by the way, up until this point, is a good cop.
The best cop.
He's just the best cop, and then all of a sudden, he's like, civil rights, fuck that. I don't like Michael J. Pollard.
Who needs civil rights when you can put a gun in someone's crotch? I've said that for years. I think it holds true even today. But there's... So Michael J. Pollard's standing there, and then Michael J. Pollard's friend, as they're playing pool, tries to pull a knife on Dolph Lundgren, but there's Brian Bimbim with his gun ready to be like, oh, you need to not do that. Hold off on that. And then when they cut back, Michael J. Pollard has this look on his face. It's bonkers and wonderful. He opens his mouth wide like an excited toddler, and he makes these weird straining noises that are kind of like, well, an excited toddler. And it's just like, what are you enjoying this? Are you scared? Are you in pain? Michael J. Pollard, I can't tell what exactly it is that you are experiencing here, but it makes for one of the most insane... But, and again, mind you, this is a movie about aliens coming down from space to steal people's endorphins so that they can sell them as drugs on another planet. And this strikes me as the weirdest moment of the whole movie. It's such an odd reaction. And not only because... Yeah, like you said, Dolph Lundgren suddenly is like, Miranda rights, what the fuck are those? But because Michael J. Pollard can't seem to make up his mind about how he feels about having a gun in his crotch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a little weird.
It's a little weird.
This movie has all these, it's just such a collection of weird oddities, like, the entire time. Like I said from the beginning, you never get bored with this movie.
And you so can't. It won't. There's
it
literally,
won't let you.
There's literally a point where if you think you're getting bored, because there's that moment in every cop movie, every buddy cop movie, where they have to consult some kind of lab technician, right?
Yeah.
So that scene is usually the part where people might go to the bathroom. They might, you know, have a cigarette, go get the popcorn, whatever. This movie won't even let you do that. No. This movie literally writes that lab technician as a screaming caffeine addict. So as soon as you start to nod off, because you're like, oh, I know this scene. This is the obligatory. We got to talk to the lab tech. He literally turns from our heroes and just goes, and it's like, okay, they literally just scream the audience back to attention.
Yep.
That is brilliant. This movie literally will not let you rest for 2 seconds.
I think brilliant's a strong word.
I'm telling you, that's exactly why it's there.
It's a very strong word.
That is a really amazing grasp of the technical structure of a buddy cop movie. Like, that is someone understanding exactly the mechanics of these things and going, this is where the audience is going to get bored, so scream at them. We can't have Dolph Lundgren kick this lab tech in the face. That doesn't make sense. So we're going to write something else that doesn't make sense, but will at least wake the audience up. And I'm sorry, I think that's a brilliant move. It's not sensical, but it works. And yeah, so we need to talk, of course, about the finale of the movie, where you have Dolph Lundgren kind of chasing this alien through through an old factory, because, again, it's an action movie.
Made in the 80s.
Made in the 80s. In Houston, which, you know, factories, why not? Old factories. The main alien, the like scary alien guy, is played by Matthias Hughes, who is himself Matthias Huge. He's 6'5". They literally had him do all of his own stunts because they couldn't find a stunt double his size. They were just like, we can't find anybody who's as tall as you, so you're going to do your own stunts. And he's like, okay, fine. And he looks great. He's got like that weird kind of receding hairline and the white hair. He looks like, I don't know, a roadie for Meatloaf or something. And he's got those contact lenses that give him kind of a milky eyed look.
Yeah.
And he only says, "I come in peace." That's all he ever says.
I come in peace.
But he's like, you know, when he runs, there's a scene earlier in the movie where he's running across these cars while the alien police officer is firing at him, and each level of car is blowing up behind him. He's positively skipping across the hoods of those cars, and it's really unsettling to watch, because you're like, I think that's just this guy's natural gait because he is that huge. And that really works. And then in the finale, when he's running around and Dolph Lundgren is chasing him, they're shooting at each other, leading up to, of course, the reason this movie is really called I Come in Peace, and the reason we can put to bed any argument of Dark Angel or Lethal Contact or any of that other shit.
The big tag of this movie, anyone who's ever seen this movie, if you say, I come in peace, they will answer with,
and you go in pieces, asshole. Because that is the final line. It's almost
It was in the trailer.
Yeah.
Like, it's in the trailer. That's how they sold this movie. And you know, fucking 14-year-old me was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to see that new Dolph Lundgren movie where he says, then you go in pieces, asshole.
Exactly.
And I sat there the whole movie waiting for that line. And I'm like, it's got to be coming soon. It's got to be any day now. He's going to say it. I come in peace. You go in pieces, asshole. And holy shit, did he ever say it. And holy God, was that just one of those moments of 1990 that was just like, I mean, that was one of the things, like, if you've ever seen Bowfinger, Bowfinger isn't really joking. Like, in the late 80s and throughout the 90s, that was kind of the whole thing, was you needed to have that big, powerful punchline at the end, mm-hmm. you know, because you were going to have a cliched action sequence, but you needed to have some catchy line that punched that up. In fact, one of my favorite special features of all time is on Commando, when they have a gag reel of sorts of Schwarzenegger putting the pipe through the mm-hmm. guy,
yeah,
and the steam coming out, and him going through his whole litany of every single punchline that he tried. There's like 50 of them.
Yeah.
Let off some steam. Just let it out, you know, and the whole series just goes through all of it. You're like, oh my God, they literally tried to find all the funny they could from this one little gag. And
yeah.
And that's what this feels like. But this is like one of the best ones ever.
Yeah.
Like, it really is like, here, we name the movie after our big punchline at the end. Fuck yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, it's in this case, I think it's called a one-liner, because that's the one you would use if you only could say one thing. If Dolph Lundgren was only allowed to say one line in the entire movie, it would have been that one. It completely redefines what a one-liner is. It's like, if this is all you got to say at all in the film, this is what you would fucking say. And it works so well. It's exactly as you said. It's the fuck yeah moment of the movie. And every time I have ever seen this film, no matter who I'm watching it with, no matter how many times they've seen it, no matter whether or not they've been drinking, that moment elicits applause. It just, you can't.
Oh, yeah.
It's so infectiously
satisfying.
Absolutely.
Which is what this movie is. This movie is pure, unadulterated satisfaction.
Yes.
It is like, look, do you like B movies? Yeah. Do you like the 80s? Yeah. Do you like Dolph Lundgren? Yeah. We'll sit down and watch this for 90 minutes and fucking blow a load, because this movie is just going to tickle you. It was a friend's birthday a few months back, and a bunch of us got together and rented a cabin out in the woods.
To murder each other.
Shut up. You were invited, asshole. So we went out in the middle of the woods to hang out and barbecue and drink and watch movies and play board games. And it was my job. I was asked to curate the movies and to create a stack of movies to show for his birthday that would entertain a cabin full of people and would be exactly what, you know, our friend Jason would want to watch. Mm. And this was the first movie I pulled out. And of course, Jason hadn't seen it in years, and he's like, fuck yeah. And everybody else is like, what is I Come in Peace? And I'm like, you guys sit down and you are in for a treat. And sure enough, by the end, it was one of those things where a lot of times when you do stuff like that, like especially that weekend out at the cabin, you throw a movie on and, you know, the whole room would be full at first, but halfway through, half of the people have wandered off, you know, people are drinking or smoking or doing whatever. And you'd have a few leftovers sitting and watching the movie. This movie gained people. Spouses would come in and like, what are you watching? Shh, sit down and watch this. This is amazing. Like, it's that kind of a movie. Like, you can't take your fucking eyes off this. It is astounding.
Yeah, it is. But what I love about it is, even as it's balls to the wall entertaining, even as it is completely bug nuts with its concept and throwing everything at the wall, it never cheapens out. There's never a point in this movie where it feels like they cut a corner or were lazy about something. There's a great scene where the evil alien is taking the endorphins from this woman, and the way that it's edited and the effects dummy that they used, it really looks like he just punches her in the skull with this spike,
yeah.
And it's really effective and upsetting.
Yeah,
and I was just like, you know, they could have done this a million ways.
Yeah.
They could have cut away from it. They could have used a really cheap mannequin. So many things they could have done to just not care about that one very tiny moment.
This whole movie feels like the type of film that a lot of directors and actors would snicker through and be like, hey, we're in on the joke. And this movie never winks at the camera. It never says, hey, we're in on the joke. This movie, in some way, thinks it's a great movie,
yeah,
and at least is trying to be.
And that's what I admire so much, even about really bad movies, is when you have that level of sincerity. I think we've talked about this a lot.
Yeah.
Like, this to me is the epitome of, you know, that's why I don't really buy into so bad it's good so much. Is like, yes, this movie has a lot of areas where it falls short, and you could call it a bad movie. But there are things that are being done here with so much sincerity and so much effort and so much achievement in a lot of ways. So many great people working on this movie that you can't ignore that. You can't write it off.
And it's entertaining. I'm just going to say, it's 2015.
Yeah.
This movie came out 25 years ago. Nobody's been able to make a interstellar drug movies.
That's true.
Like, this is such a fresh idea that nobody's been able to do anything remotely like it. Like, even with Battle Truck, we could be like, nobody's done Battle Truck. It's like, dude, did you see Mad Max Fury Road? Because it just like took Battle Truck out by the woodshed, beat the shit out of it, and made it suck its dick. Like, that is what Fury Road. Like, it's,
yeah, I read your review.
You like Battle Truck? Well, here's 20 Battle Trucks.
Here's
Fuck
a
you.
Fucking fleet of Battle Trucks.
Yeah, but interstellar drug dealers stealing endorphins versus Dolph Lundgren and the dude from Dream On.
Untouched. No one's ever attempted to do that. We don't get inundated from, you know, the movie websites like, oh, they're remaking I Come in Peace, because nobody is going to remake I Come in Peace.
Oh, I kind of want to remake I Come in Peace now.
We should remake I Come in Peace with AOL discs. And so wait, let's say we are.
No, because it's the future. They're shooting MP3s.
They're shooting Spotify logos? I don't know. It's very strange. But let's say we were going to remake this.
Couple of renegade podcasters. Up against intergalactic scum and a super cop from another planet that we're barely going to mention.
Who, ironically, the two podcasters, not that different. It's a buddy pod situation, but they're not that
bearded
different.
Bearded guys, one's particularly good looking, one's,
Cargill,
know, whatever.
Womp womp. So we're recasting this. We're remaking I Come in Peace. Who do we have as our two our two leads who are dissimilar only in height, essentially? That is the question I pose to you.
Oh.
So we need a big, tough guy, and we need a small, somewhat funny.
Oh, God, are you kidding? This is easy.
Okay, go.
First of all, The Rock.
Okay. Because it's a remake, so The Rock.
Because it's a remake and an action movie, so The Rock.
The Rock.
And because it's got to have comedy that works, so, The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And then you cast him,
performance that could be considered competent. Yes, okay, The Rock. Yeah, I got it.
And then, maybe Jesse Eisenberg.
Jesse Eisenberg as the Brian Bim character is not a bad choice.
the bookish, nevish, and watching those two guys together, I would watch that fucking movie.
Yeah.
And then you cast whoever you're using for the big, tall, menacing guy.
Derek Mears. Derek Ooh. Mears as the giant killer alien drug dealer.
Ooh.
I'm
saying. And okay, who's alien super cop then?
Dietrich Bader.
No.
Come on, not even
a joke. What? No. If we have a character that is that inconsequential and that forgettable, we've got to go either Taylor Kitsch.
Oh, man.
Sam, what's his name?
Worthington.
Sam Worthington.
Sam, I am not Worthington.
Sam, who's this guy again? Worthington. If you're going to
Hey, kids, do you remember Sam Worthington?
You've seen all of his movies, but you can't picture it. You can't remember his name when his face comes on screen.
He was one of the most overwhelmingly successful movies of all time, and no one fucking remembers him. Sam Worthington.
Yeah, no, No, I don't know. I don't know who you'd go with because you need to back up The Rock with somebody cool.
Yeah.
And you can't really go Vin Diesel because then they would just have to call it Fast and Furious 8.
That's true.
Foot
8. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, you'd. Somebody good in that role.
So in the role of the good alien, the cop alien.
Yeah.
Is that who we're thinking of? Yeah, that's the thing, is he barely speaks through the whole movie.
I know.
So you wouldn't need somebody who was particularly good at acting.
And then he gets kind of mortally wounded at one point.
Wait a minute, I've got it. Just considering, if you think about the story arc and what happens to him, I'm going to go with Sean Bean. Sean Bean as the intergalactic good cop. Because
he's
here. He's here to save the day. Oh, he's dead.
Oh, no, okay. No. I would ordinarily go with that. Except that then people would think of Jupiter Ascending.
Oh, that's right. We don't want to think about.
Plays an intergalactic space cop, kind of.
I wish I could put my finger on what was really. But
bees! Bees! Bees can sense royalty!
No, they fucking can't. They're bees. Are you kidding me with this shit?
They have a queen, though. And they understand that if they
so does England. So do all British people recognize what the fuck are you talking about? Jupiter Ascending is not what we are talking about. In fact, I Come in Peace, which I'm going to say it right now,
far better
than Jupiter Ascending.
If you want ridiculous science fiction movies, I Come in Peace 10 times out of 10 over Jupiter Ascending.
Absolutely.
I come in peace,
and you go in pieces.
Which brings us, of course, to the junk food pairing. And this one, I had to go with it. And then Cargill accidentally affirmed it by mentioning that this movie is, you got chocolate in my peanut butter, you got peanut butter in my chocolate. Reese's Pieces. Because you can't come in peace and go in pieces without the chocolatey, peanut buttery goodness of Reese's Pieces.
I just, that you know what? Phrasing.
What
like,
did I say?
I see where that joke came from.
Yeah.
But the idea of coming in peace and going in pieces just sounds kind of fucking gross.
It is gross. Make sure to bring a towel, maybe an old rag you don't care so much about.
It's a roll of toilet paper. It's
because when you come in peace, you go in pieces. Delicious candy, put it in your mouth. Well, that's going to do it for I Come in Peace. Thank you so much for joining us. We will be back next week with another buddy cop film. I believe it will be Running Scared, which is one of my favorite movies pretty much ever.
Which Running Scared, though?
From 1986.
Oh, with that Running Scared.
Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines. Very excited to talk about that next week. Once again, we are available on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. You can find us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema. You can also like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/Junk Food Cinema. And please do, if you go to iTunes, Leave us a rating out of, I think it's like 5 stars, a review. We really do appreciate those. Cargill, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Twitter at Massawyrm, that's MASSAWYRM, or on Facebook at facebook.com/Massawyrm.
Awesome. You can find me on Twitter at BryGuySalisbury. You can also find me at facebook.com/BryanSalisburyCritic. And you can find me at oneofus.net, my home away from home. A lot of great geek blogs and podcasts over there for every taste. Check that out. So we need to go, and I figure there's only one way we can go.
In pieces.
Well, I was just going to say through the door.
In pieces.
But we're going to do it in pieces. Fuck it, we'll do it in pieces.